Good morning, members. We don't have a quorum yet, so we won't make any motions or read or approve the minutes. We do have a bill before us today that we're hearing, House File 2934. So we're going to begin testimony. If you would, please, Representative, introduce yourself and, for the record, get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative John Purcell, and I'm here this morning regarding House File 2934, and I trust that when we get ready to do the proper motions that we'll know the path that this is gonna take, and we can move ahead with that. I have with me today. I'm not going to try and explain everything in here. I've got folks that are far more expert in doing that to the committee. And I have with me today Mr. Mike McElhenney on the Veterans Office over here, the Commissioner's Office, and we'll walk through this bill and have our discussion.
So. Thank you, Representative Purcell. Mike, would you like to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mike McElhenney, Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And I would ask exactly how you would prefer us to proceed at this point, Mr. Chair, if you want us to go through each provision of the bill or a general overview and then get into each.
Please, go ahead and move in that direction.
Okay. Mr. Chair, as you can see, you have the Governor's Supplemental Budget Bill, a portion of it before you, Article 2, which covers Veterans Affairs issues. And just a general overview, the total cost of the bill is essentially yet to be determined because of the portion we'll talk about in a few minutes, the Minnesota GI Bill expansion, that there's flexibility there. But for the first couple of provisions, the governor and the MDVA has asked for a $250,000 appropriation to go to MACV, $100,000 for administering the on-the-job training and apprenticeship portion of the expanded Minnesota GI Bill, $100,000 appropriation to continue the Honor Guard program, $1,005,000 added to the base for CVSO grants. Currently, there are one grant currently. There used to be two. One has expired, and we want to combine the two to keep up the good, valuable work of the CVSOs. And then lastly, we have an expansion of the Minnesota GI Bill, where we add to that provisions in order to use the funding for on-the-job training and apprenticeship programs. Having said that, going back to the beginning, to the first item, the MACV additional funding, I would tell you that in prior to 2010, but as recently as 2010, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Secretary Shinseki, along with the President, they've been working on a long issue of veterans homelessness. And on any given night, throughout the United States, not just specific to Minnesota, there are hundreds of thousands of homeless veterans. And so one of the things that has been discovered is that you can't just, homelessness is a point in time. It can affect any veteran from any socioeconomic status in life, but it is a point in time. So we think that we are compelled as a state agency to do our part as well, and we would ask for additional funding to ensure that homeless veterans throughout the state are indeed taken care of. Secondly, the Honor Guard funding, which we have asked for to continue that program. Right now, about 30% of our veterans, we are aware of, take advantage of any federal or state programs that are provided to veterans that they have earned. That leaves 70% that never even tap into the benefits that they have earned. However, what we do know that to be factual is the fact that many veterans want an honorable burial. They want a flag on their coffin, they want an honor guard detail, and they want a ceremonial departure. So that is something that we believe strongly at MDVA, that we, in fact, owe the veterans. The program began in 2007. Appropriations have sort of ebbed and flowed. Last year, we did not receive a continued appropriation to fund the program. We had to find funds elsewhere. However, as we look into the future, we see the Korean-era veterans and the World War II-era veterans starting to die. We see an increased rate of Vietnam-era veterans, all in their late 60s, 70s, and 80s. And we see that the VA federally has projected that 2016 is going to be a critical year when a lot of those aging veterans do, in fact, become deceased. So we want to continue this program. It's a good program, and we believe strongly in it. Moving on to the County Veteran Service Officer grants, as I mentioned, there's two grants. There's an operational grant, which is funded at about $95,000 a year, and it rotates on a three-year cycle as to when counties can, a third of the counties get it every 3 years. There's also what was known as an enhancement grant that sunset last June 30th, and that moved, fluctuated between initially $200,000 up to $1 million+. And it had about a constant rate of $750,000. And what those grants allowed for was the county veteran service officers to purchase updated IT equipment, to conduct outreach to veterans, to conduct and facilitate reintegration of veterans. Oftentimes we see that, the norm has been and the standard has been set that these CVSOs will go out to post located throughout the United States as our veterans come back into the country and help reintegrate them. And it's a critical time, and it's an imperative thing that has to happen in order to get these veterans started off on the right foot. So that funding would be for a variety of reasons. But as we've seen it reduced, we've already had feedback from CVSOs that their capabilities have been reduced. And when their capabilities are reduced, the veterans are not, we can't provide services the way that they deserve and that they have earned to have them provided. So we would ask for continued funding for that program. The Minnesota GI Bill expansion, I think we've heard about that a few times. The governor has mentioned that himself on several occasions. And the idea behind that is, we have this program. It was funded at $6 million in open appropriation. Forecast usage and usage rates for the past 3 years show that that is a highly underutilized program. Right about the time that the Minnesota GI Bill evolved, a new federal program came on station, Chapter 33 GI Bill. It's much more robust, and it almost made the Minnesota GI Bill antiquated in that if you had served as an active duty member, a period of service, the Chapter 33 GI Bill did a lot of what Minnesota GI Bill was intended to do. And so the usage rates have been low. So as we look forward, and the commissioner said several times he projects a tsunami of veterans coming back into the state of Minnesota. We've talked with the MEP station, and we know that 45% of those who enlist on a daily basis will return to the state as a reservist or a National Guard member, but the other 60% or so go out to worldwide assignments and trickle back in. Now, recent reports from Stars and Stripes stated that in 2013, by the end of 2013, the Army alone, one of several branches of service, is going to downsize by 10,000 members. And along with that comes logistical support in the civilian field as well. They're also going to downsize by 14,000 civilians. So that adds to the unemployment rates. One of the things that we're trying to do is, two things we're trying to achieve with this Minnesota GI Bill expansion is to address the high unemployment rates among veterans that we've seen and heard so much about, as well as provide opportunities for the downsizing and the reduction in force that we predict coming as these wars also downsize. And we believe that the language in this bill will, in fact, allow us to achieve that. And I could go on and on, Mr. Chair, and if there's any particular questions, I'd be happy to.
We do have some questions. Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've listened to what you're saying, but I got more confused. Were there more appropriations for this type of service to our veterans in this Minnesota? Was there more monies available in the past than there are now? Or do we have so many more veterans now than we had in the past? Is the federal money been cut to Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative, to answer a couple of ways, from when I looked back at a lot of these programs and services that MDVA provides, when they initially evolved, the appropriations were low. Then they increased significantly right around 2009-10 time, when there was more federal dollars, as I'm told, coming to the state of Minnesota and more applied to the veterans. Now, because of the economy, I suppose that has waned a bit. The one thing we realize, total numbers that veterans bring to the state of Minnesota through programs and services, through federal benefits, through health care and everything combined, is about $1.8 billion comes back to the state of Minnesota because of veterans in one form or fashion. So as we look forward, we know that DOD budgets are going to be reduced. That's a given. And we also assume that VA budgets are going to be reduced as well. There are areas where they talk about expanding, and there are also areas where they talk about reducing. There are mechanisms that are being put into place now that, as we sort of analyze it and look through it, we can predict that it's going to reduce some of those funds coming back to the state and under the auspice of efficiencies, and that might be because initially there'll be a reduction in claims processed at the federal level until things are kind of sorted out, and then we might see more claims coming in. And so it's difficult to predict exactly what we're going to see in the future, but we do know the facts that we have to work with are that the numbers are going to increase. More folks are getting out, more veterans are being generated every time they deploy to the different theaters of operations, and it's we have a source in the DOD, the Defense Manpower Data System, and as we talk to those folks on various occasions, the numbers are increasing every day. We know that, and when we look at the RIF, we just don't know how many are going to come back to the state of Minnesota, but there will be more. We know that.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, sir, do we get less money because Minnesota contributes more? Federal money because Minnesota contributes more, and assume more responsibility?
Representative, no, we do not. There's not that I'm aware of, does the federal government look at what the state of Minnesota contributes to its veterans and reduces us anywhere. No, I'm not aware of that.
Do Representative Mr. Chair, per veteran, per capita of veterans, do we get a fair share in comparison with other states?
Mr. McElhenney.
Mr. Chair, and to answer that question, I would say yes, and here is why. Because again, when we look at the variables that we do know, the state of Minnesota has, I believe it's the fifth most robust National Guard and Reserve component as compared to the rest of the state. So that is more members in the state that sometimes achieve the status of veteran and sometimes don't. But what we do see, because of those large numbers, there is a large need in every county on a rotating basis, and I don't have, I don't know if Military Affairs is here, but there's so many folks come in on a given day, month, year, and so many go out. One recent report from Stars and Stripes stated that 195,000 active members, or I'm sorry, 160,000 active members get out of the military each year, and 95,000 of those are National Guard members. So if you were to apply the math, which we haven't done, I'm sure a significant amount are here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, and then how do we convey the message and how do we lobby for additional monies with Congress and with the federal authorities that allocate the monies?
Mr. McKelney.
Mr. Chair and Representative, we do that on several levels. We work hand-in-hand with our congressional members when we're discussing potential legislation that would be beneficial for the veterans. Here in the state of Minnesota, we have what's known as the Commander's Task Force, and they have also, by the way, supported this bill with the governor, and they're the voice of 381,000 veterans. They're 9 congressionally chartered veterans organizations, and they also have federal, you know, there's a hierarchy to the organizations, and they lobby for veterans at the federal level as well. So it's happening, and if there's any specific idea out there that everyone collectively thinks that we need to work towards this, we certainly have avenues to do that.
Follow up, Representative Murphy.
I'm done.
Okay, I think it'd be important to recognize that Backveed currently in their homeless vet program receives about $1 million, or receives $1 million a biennium, or $500,000 a year. And I think members last year, you can remember that we added an additional $100,000 in one-time money in our omnibus finance bill. And I've got some questions. We got a couple of more members that are eager to ask you some questions about your testimony so far, Mr. McKelney, but I would like to get back around to just how that $250,000, how that's spent. But right now I'd like to go to Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I get to my question, I just want to pick up on what Representative Murphy was asking, and I want to see if we could clarify one thing. She was talking about the contribution from the feds to the states. Is there a some sort of a relationship in terms of the federal appropriation based on what the states do contribute? In other words, do the feds actually look at what states do for veterans and make an adjustment based on that? And let me just continue, because I think that they don't, or they shouldn't, let me put it that way, what the states do really is above and beyond what the feds would do, is the way I think that the federal government treats its vets. But could you please...
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Deputy Commissioner Reggie Worlds on that.
Commissioner, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Good morning. I'm Reggie Worlds, Deputy Commissioner for Programs and Services with the Department of Veterans Affairs. Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative, to answer your question, no, they don't give us an appropriation based upon what we do in the state with regards to providing service to veterans. The money that comes in from the federal government with regards to veterans goes directly into the pockets of veterans due to service-connected claims that are prepared by our county veteran service offices and our service organizations. It is based strictly upon that compensation that they're entitled to receive, or a pension for some veterans who are not able to continue working in their normal occupations due to non-service-related disabilities. And the caveat for VA pension, of course, is based upon at least one day of wartime service. The other additional monies that come into the state from the federal go into our VA, federal VA hospital programs and also for insurance, veterans life insurance, and also for, of course, voc rehab, our GI bills, and also for construction costs for rehabbing of our veterans facilities.
Representative Leidiger.
Thank you. That explains it a little bit better, and I think that answers the question. If I could
Representative
continue,
Leidiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to get back to one thing that you said about a figure that you got from the MEP stations, talking about 45% who enlist. This would be the active duty. Most likely would they return, and 65%. You said don't return, they go to worldly assignments, and I'm assuming those you're talking about civilian, they go somewhere else, they live somewhere else, and then maybe trickle back. And what I want to know is, are those official figures, and do they play into what the state does or the federal government does in terms of compensation? Or not compensation, but benefits.
Mr. Chair. Representative, yes. A lot of questions in there, so I'll try to take them one at a time. First of all, somewhere between 40 and 45%, based on MEP stations data, that of service members that enlist and ship out of Minneapolis or throughout the state, on a given day, about 40 to 45% of them are reservists or guard component, meaning for the guard component, they will go to basic training, they will be trained, get an MOS, and this is the enlisted members, and they'll come back to the state of Minnesota and serve in a unit somewhere here in the state. About 5% of the reservists might come back to the state, and reservists will PCS throughout as well as active duty. The 60% of those that process through there will go out to what I called worldwide assignments. They might go to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, Bamberg, Germany, Korea, Japan, and they will serve their duty there on active duty. And it's difficult to measure how many of those come back and at what point. There's a lot of options. Some will do 20 years or more of service and retire, and they might, when they get out, whatever station they process out of, they might stay in that particular state. They might come back to Minnesota. Some might do a period of service for a couple of years and then return to the state of Minnesota. So those veterans are trickling back in on a daily basis, and relative to the CVSOs and what they do and providing opportunities when they do come back to the state in regards to the Minnesota GI Bill and expansion of the apprenticeship and OJT programs, creating more opportunities, or at least having them available for them. That's where I was going with that statement. That's everyday normal numbers before the military conducts a reduction in force. And then what happens there is there will be potentially many more that are out of the norm, and the system essentially could get a little backlogged if we see that a large population coming back to Minnesota. We know now, one fact we realize and you've heard about several times is 1st Brigade is coming back again, and we're going to start to see a lot of those members. I know the Guard has done several studies to determine how many of their folks are going to be unemployed or underemployed. That's a part of the population that we're trying to address as well. So it's a collective measure with all these portions of this bill that we think we can address, unemployment rates for those veterans, as well as setting the stage.
Mr. Representative Leidiger.
Thank you, and I appreciate that clarification. So when we budget for our needs, you take into consideration what you just got done explaining to us, and how does that affect the underutilization of some of the programs that that was just discussed, the VSO programs.
Mr. Chair, and can you be more, you mentioned the veteran service organizations, the county veteran service officers?
Yeah, my understanding, did I hear that right earlier, that we have some underutilization of these programs, programs?
Yes, the underutilization I was referring to is the current Minnesota GI Bill, and that the way it's programmed right now is there is an open appropriation of up to $6 million to offer eligibility to veterans to seek higher education. And the rate we're seeing them use that program right now is about a running average of about 707 veterans use the Minnesota GI Bill on an annual basis. And if you use the ratio of about 700 students to a cost of $1 million, it's underutilized. And part of that underutilization would, we most likely think, is due to the Chapter 33 GI Bill, which is much more robust. And the higher number of military personnel, Guard, Reserve, Active, irregardless, that are deploying and achieving the definition of a veteran, both state and federal, which would then entitle them to the Chapter 33 GI Bill benefit if they so choose.
Representative Leidiger, follow up. Well,
yes, thanks, Mr. Chair. So then what adjustments do we make are being recommended to make sure that we appropriate the right amount of dollars for the program based on that?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. McNeil.
Representative, as a start, we have suggested to expand the availability of those funds to be used for apprenticeship programs and on-the-job training opportunities. We think that's a good way to provide more opportunities for veterans to seek skills to make them employable. We think it's an opportunity in the expansion overall, loosening the criteria right now from post 9/11 veterans to all generations of veterans. We think we can expend more of those funds, but the purpose is not to expend the funds. The purpose is to provide opportunities and address unemployment. And so those are a couple of the methods that we've developed right now. And I will tell you, too, it's interesting, at the federal level, they have decided to go that route as well.
Representative Leidiger.
Well, so I applaud you looking at different ways to, I mean, tackle the unemployment, and it may not be, you know, one route that we send the people through one route. There has to be multiple ways to solve this problem. So I'm glad you're looking at other ways to use the dollars to help the guys to get them employed. Can you talk dollars? I mean, how many are you taking these dollars out of the education grants and putting them into the other training and on the job training? How much are we talking about that we're moving?
Mr. McElhenney.
Mr. Chair, right now the best analysis we have is somewhere around the neighborhood of $1 million is what we are going to be able to expend based on best projected potential usage of those that are available to use it. And we base that off of the current usage for the Minnesota GI Bill. So I mentioned that at the federal level, they're implementing a similar program. Because of that, the usage will probably be lower for the state dollars required. Did that answer your question?
Representative Leidiger?
Yes. Yeah, okay. I think it did.
All right. First of all, members, we do have a quorum, so I'd like to take a motion that we move the minutes.
Mr. Chairman.
Of March 22nd.
Mr. Chairman, I move the minutes.
So I'm hoping you all have had time to look at the minutes. Officially open the meeting. Oh, first of all, we need to officially open the meeting, so since we have a quorum. So We're officially open, and we have a motion to approve the minutes. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes are moved. I've got a few questions myself before we proceed, and then we can bring in some other testifiers, and possibly we'll open up some additional questions. This is the third bill we've heard. I'm kind of concerned that this bill's taken so long to get here, maybe one question is, you know, why is it taken this long, you know, in terms of the governor's bill to get to the committee. But we have three, House File 2909, which is Representative McElfatrick's, and House File 1982, which is also Representative McElfatrick's. We've heard 2909 recently. Some of those same elements that are in the governor's bill are contained in Representative McElfatrick's bill. Job training, employer credit, veterans who are eligible for the GI Bill, so on. We see dramatically different numbers between those two bills, and like some comment regarding is that due to the expansion of the population? And then I have some concern, and I don't want to give you load up too many questions at the same time, but can we truly trust that the numbers that you have, if you look at how expansive this program potentially may become because of the numbers that we're opening it up to, do those numbers accurately reflect that? I only say that because very similarly in House File 1982, we're looking at numbers vastly different. In fact, fiscal note of $111 million. So I gave you a couple questions there, so I'll give you some time.
Mr. Chair.
Mr.
So in no particular order, a couple of things. The numbers in 1982, Representative McElfatrick's bill, I'm not certain exactly what those were going to, what the final assumption was on that. I don't know that there was a completed fiscal note on that. But relative to the portions of the apprenticeship and OJT portion of Representative McElfatrick's bill, I talked about last week. An initial number I came up with was about $18 million. And again, there was not a proper fiscal note conducted completed for the committee on that. And what I did was, is I looked objectively as possible at the language and applied it to numbers and data that we have. And I, Representative McElfatrick had talked to me a little bit about the fact that she'd been working on the bill for about a year. And I approached her very, very late in the game, I think just before the hearing last week, and we briefly talked about the bill and that there were some differences between the governor's language and her language. There wasn't a lot of feedback on, I guess, what the assumptions and what the methods of execution of her bill were going to be. And so being objective in that fiscal note, it elevated the numbers more so than ours. Now, it was difficult to be fully objective in our bill, in the governor's bill, because we were able to subject how we plan on executing everything that we've asked to do in this bill. So it was possibly a little more subjective. We knew who we were trying to target. We knew usage rates from the previous Minnesota GI Bill. We knew through various data from the Department of Education on age brackets of older veterans and the rates that they go to school. I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% from age 35 to 50 is, I want to say, is a number that I remember. So we knew that the targeted group is going to be much lower based on the way we had planned to put this into action, as opposed from objectively just looking at the language. There was essentially, I think, trying to achieve some of the same outcomes. So that's one portion of that. Secondly, you know, the $18 million would never be achieved because there's a cap of $6 million and some of the dates that have been amended and so forth. So we never intended on spending more than $6 million. We know that's a cap. But, again, looking at the most current data and applying the best methods of you know, a variety of fiscal practices, I think we can really only honestly predict that maybe a 700 to 1,000 more veterans might take advantage of this program in its expanded state the way we asked to expand it.
Ms. Roberts, we do have a fiscal note on the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, we do have a final fiscal note on the bill. It was completed on March 22nd, and the estimates for this is for Representative McElfatrick's bill 2909. It's $210,000 in fiscal year 13, and then $420,000 per year each year after that.
Okay. And we don't have a completed fiscal note, however, on 1982.
Mr. Chair, I don't believe so. That bill is in the Higher Education Committee, and there is an open fiscal note request on that.
And do we have a fiscal note on the bill before us today?
Mr. Chair, we don't have a formal fiscal note because this is the governor's supplemental budget recommendation, so the numbers are in the governor's materials that are released with the supplemental budget. You do have those in your packet, and the estimated cost for the governor's GI Bill expansion, only that piece of the bill, not the other changes, is $915,000 in fiscal year 2013, $1,475,000 in 2014, and then going up to $1.9 million in fiscal year 2015.
And Mr. McKelleny, $6 million cap is set by the legislature, so that can be changed later. And I'm wondering, if you project this out, do you see those numbers growing? How? I mean, will the $6 million cap actually be able to accommodate all you'd like to do based on how this would change? Mr. McKelleny.
Mr. Chair, right now, based on various conversations that we've had, I think we're safe to say that we're probably not going to achieve that $6 million a cap. The way we have planned and designed the program expansion, again, at this point, because, again, going back to what I originally said about the Chapter 33 GI Bill, many current veterans, anyway, have earned that, and this, again, is still a last dollar in program. We intend that to be the same way we apply it to the expansion if it was to take place for the apprenticeship and OJT as a last dollar in program. And because there's so many federal programs out there right now, we think that most people, I mean, they have to by statute use those programs first. That's how the language is laid out. However, we also know that there are several veterans out there, again, in the expanded population that need to maintain their skills at work and maintain employability, and that have sought unemployment insurance, and we're trying to, you know, holistically help the veteran community and not necessarily just the post 9/11 veterans, although they are all equally as important to us.
Representative Lanning.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and first of all, apologize for not being here on time. It's a little difficult to be in two places at one time, and Representative Anderson and others of us had to be at the Ways and Means Committee, and Health and Human Services was omnibus bill was being discussed. Members, I would move that House File 2934. I had moved the bill, and our intent is to lay this bill over, keeping it alive. And I might point out that the don't interpret that as keeping the tax increases alive, but certain provisions in this bill. So I'd move the bill.
So we've any other testifiers? Any other questions of the testifiers that we have now? Simon, Representative Simon.
Sorry, and Mr. Chair, it's probably my failing for coming in late. But so we're laying this over. I'm just trying to get a sense, and maybe this has already been repeated, just let me know if it has, and we can discuss it offline, but is the intent to lay it over and that we'll move it out of here at some point, given some more information, or not necessarily?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, laying a bill over keeps provisions alive, and like I said, the tax increase is not something that we're going to pass out of this committee, but you know, the other option would be to vote the bill down And there are provisions in here that, as has already been mentioned, that there are other bills that contain those provisions, and we want to make sure that there's an opportunity to keep those provisions alive.
Representative Simon, follow up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now that we have the bill before us, if I may, there is a technical amendment, and Representative McElpatrick has agreed to move that amendment.
Representative A2 amendment. Representative McElpatrick, to the A2 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment.
Members, you have the A2 amendment in your packages. Representative McElpatrick, could you explain the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Actually, this amendment was brought to me. It's relatively straightforward here. The county may not reduce the budget by any amount received as a grant, is the first provision, and that a person participating in on-the-job training must be performing satisfactorily to remain in the program.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative McElpatrick. Any further explanation needed, I would myself and the VA reps here would entertain those questions.
Representative, or members, any questions of the amendment? If not, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
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 All opposed? So you have the bill in the shape that you'd like it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any other questions of these testifiers before we move on? Okay, thank you, gentlemen. Would anybody else for the amendment or for the bill as amended like to testify? Please introduce yourselves for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Todd Kubinski. I'm the Director of Veteran Service for Scott County and the current president of the Minnesota Association for County Veteran Service Officers. We represent all 87 counties. We currently have around 120 active veteran service officers doing the work that our veterans have earned. We are the entry point for all veterans in the state of Minnesota. We do the nuts and bolts work for our veterans to make sure that they get the benefits that they've earned. Our work in conjunction with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on certain collaborations, including the enhancement grant and the operational grant, has been invaluable to making sure that our veterans are getting the best possible service. We lead the nation, as far as I'm concerned, in how we take care of our veterans. We lead the nation in making sure that our own National Guardsmen are getting enrolled in VA health care. We make sure that they're getting their claims work done appropriately. And the county veteran service officer is someone that a veteran can trust. We don't represent the federal government. And there's still some mistrust of that with veterans when they come off active duty. So we're there for them. These bills that we're looking at today are imperative to help maintain that service. We're very good at taking care of other people's money when we use it. We're able to display tangible outcomes. And I think it's important that anything we could do to reduce homelessness, joblessness of our veteran population is an obligation all of us have to do. At this time, I would like to turn it over to our legislative chair, Mr. Milt Schoen.
Mr. Schoen, introduce yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Milton Schoen. I'm the Hennepin County Veteran Service Officer, and I'd like to take a few moments to tell you what we do as county veteran service officers, what outcomes we achieve, and answer the question of whether House File 2934 will be worth the return on investment. We support the other provisions of the bill for the honor guards, for on-the-job training, and as they relate to homelessness with MACV. We are the point of contact in this state. And whether you live in Rochester or St. James or Holly or Carson Lake or Hermantown or Minneapolis, our legislature has said no matter where you live in the state, somebody should assist you in obtaining your benefits. And that's what we do, and we think we do it well. It is not easy business. We have numerous definitions of what a veteran is, both on the state and a federal level. We have several different types of eligibility for VA health care, and we deal with a system that is relatively complex. We can have veteran service officers send their claims to the Fargo Regional Office and people to health care to the St. Cloud VA Medical Center. Mm-hmm. We've got people who may send their claims to Minneapolis and people to health care to Sioux Falls. We have many community-based outpatient clinics, and the county veteran service officer understands what is needed to make the benefits on paper a reality to the individuals who need them. 90% of the original federal claims in the state of Minnesota are originated by county veteran service officers for compensation and pension. If you look at VA health care and if you look at the VA benefits, comp and pension, that's $1.5 billion per year that comes into the state. We work with people to deal with the wounds that are seen and those that are unseen, and I can tell you the people we serve, when they get awarded compensation, they didn't win the lottery. They'd much rather not have the disability and be able to go forward than to be in the position they are. With respect to VA health care, there's zero county or state share. The feds pick up 100% of the cost. I'll be going down to Camp Shelby, Mississippi, and we've got over 30 county veteran service officers that will be meeting with our 2,600 Minnesota National Guard troops who are returning from Iraq and Kuwait. We will enroll each one of them in VA health care. We'll do a combat theater questionnaire. We'll send the information back to the county to make sure that they get into that VA system. When we started this in 2007, when the Red Bulls came back in 07, 3 out of 10 Guard and Reserve members who served in Iraq or Afghanistan enrolled in VA health care. In Minnesota, 99% of our Minnesota National Guard are enrolled in VA health care. By the time we get done in May, we will have enrolled 11,000 individuals. Now, some of them may have had more than one tour. But the way I do the math, there's 7,000 additional people in the VA system in Minnesota. And with an unemployment rate that's been over 20% for Iraqi and Afghan veterans, a lot of those people would wind up on medical assistance, and the state would be picking up 50% of the cost of their care, and certainly in our county, there'd be uncompensated care. So we did that to make a difference. We work with our partners at the state to get state benefits. At a county level, we're reliant on the property tax, and that was designed to make it difficult to increase local government spending. But we think that in this state that strong counties make a difference. They're closest to the people. They're an incubator for change. And the provisions of this bill, by having a base for every county and to have bonuses if you have larger populations, will allow us to do things and to meet the challenges as we go forward. And it probably makes a little sense, given the way the VA operates, that we would leverage our resources to get people into a system that is virtually 100% paid for by the federal government. We've got some major initiatives in Todd's county. He uses county-funded psychological evaluations to help service-connect people who otherwise might not be awarded compensation for post-traumatic stress disorder. That's creativity. In our county, we've got a veterans court. We've had homeless initiatives. In other counties, people provide transportation through their county veteran service officer offices to make sure that people get the services that they need. I would just conclude by saying that we've got a very effective county veteran service office system, as President Kubinski has stated. We're here to make sure that people don't fall through the cracks, that they get the help they need so that they can be successful going forward. and be contributing citizens in this state. And with that, I thank you for your time, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
The first question that I have was for Mr. Schoen. I think I heard that you said that the county veteran service offices were federally paid.
No. We come out off the property tax.
Okay.
And so that's our challenge, and one of the reasons that our partners at the state want to have a grant system is to help provide us resources so that we can innovate, so that we can do some of the things that may be challenging for county boards to provide the resources. And I guarantee you, if you go around the state and talk to county veteran service offices, that they don't always get the resources to meet some of the ideas that they'd like to put into play.
How many, Mr. Schoen, how many veteran service officers do we have in the state presently?
Right now, we're right at about 120.
Mr. Kopensky.
All 87 counties are represented.
Okay. So how would that $1 million in that line on the budget that's been presented by the governor, how would that be distributed? Proportionately by numbers of veterans in the county?
Well, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there's an $8,000 base. Everybody would get $8,000. And there's a formula based on how many veterans that you get, that you have in your county, and it tops out where Ramsey County and Hennepin would get an additional $20,000. My county, I've got 67,000 veterans, so it would help us face the challenges of that. We've moved to regional service. There's lots of things that we would like to do, and given those resources, we would try some ideas, and if they're successful, other counties would probably follow suit.
So these for operational, this is for programs?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Schoen. Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schoen, I appreciate the work of the county veteran service officers very much, and I think the veterans do too. But you stress that there are some programs that are completely paid for by the federal government, and there's some things that are done paid for by the county, and there's some things that are paid for by the state. Does the person that's receiving the service get told that this is state money and this is county money as well as federal money?
Well,
Mr. Schoen.
Mr. Chair Representative Murphy, we explain where the benefits come from. I don't think we always tell people that it's county property tax that are paying for the operations of our office, but we'll explain where the benefits come from. But frankly, the system is set up so people don't have to know the system. It's very complex, it's very challenging, and it takes a while to sort your way through it. And the idea that the wisdom of the legislature during the end of World War II was to say, no matter where you live in this state, you shouldn't be second class. There always should be somebody looking out for you to make sure that you get the resources that are available. And I think it's been a pretty successful system.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree, it has been a very successful system, but I also think we should do a little more to tell them that there is state money that's going to some of the programs, and there is county money, so that they don't think it's all federal.
Mr. Schoen, Mr. Kopensky.
Mr. Chair, thank you. We do a pretty good job of explaining whenever we apply a program for a veteran where it's coming from. If it's a state soldiers assistance program, we let them know the state of Minnesota is providing that funding, because there are different criteria for meeting eligibility for that. To give the committee an idea of what we can do, especially with that enhancement grant that sunsetted, the program that I have, our veterans come back from war. They're dealing with some pretty severe mental health issues. Unfortunately, when they go through the VA and they go through the exam process, it's at best antagonistic, at worst it's almost unbearable. The veteran will clam up, won't tell the whole story, they get denied on their claim. We know that happens. We've complained about it to the feds. There's not much we could do about it, but let them know that. So we find other ways to get the job done. One of them is to have my county mental health personnel do a full psychosocial evaluation on them after they've been denied their claim. They give me a diagnosis and an opinion, if warranted, that the mental health condition is related to their service. Right now, we've run 42 through the enhancement grant through my county. All of them denied claims. 98% of them now are approved at normally 50% or higher. So we're talking about guaranteed free health care, no copays, and we're talking about a stipend of around anywhere from $700 to $900 a month, in some cases even higher. So the return on investment is incredible with what we can do with these grants. We have very innovative people in our association. We come up with all kinds of different ways. Our job is to take care of the veteran. They've earned it. And we will do whatever it takes to get it done. And our collaboration with the state of Minnesota and these enhancement grants, it is a tool that we can use as a state to, once again, lead the nation in taking care of our veterans.
Representative Anderson was the next on my list. Once he gets back to his microphone, I'll let him ask his question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kobinski or Mr. Schoen, the $50,000 that is going to the Veterans Service Officers Association, is that for administrative costs that are not being taken care of now?
Representative Schoen, or excuse me, Mr. Schoen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that money would allow us to make some major improvements. Reintegration is something. We don't know how much more of that is going to come going forward. We'd like to address those issues. We'd like to work to set up a way of having vital documents moved electronically, and we've had proposals, and we've been working with other officials in the state to set that system up so that we don't have to wait for something to come in the mail, so that we could speed up the process. But those resources would be leveraged statewide for systematic improvements that would either allow us to address the needs of people with reintegration or to set up systems so that we could more effectively serve the veterans in our communities.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schoen, and Mr. Kobinski, these are brand new funds that you're asking for.
Representative Kobinski, or excuse me, Mr. Kobinski.
I thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson. I believe they are, but a lot of the funds that we're asking for were actually involved in the enhancement grant that we had that had sunsetted last year. I think we have shown, and because we had to report, those were competitive grants, we had to report outcomes. And I think we've done some wonderful work with that. I know I have no problem being able to articulate the money that I received in grants through that program on the tangible outcomes on that. And I think that's the goal of all of our veteran service officers. We want to make sure that that we're good stewards of that money. But we also know that with every government agency, there are gaps in services. Even with the VA, they don't always cover everything. And we're looking for ways to make sure that we take that holistic approach to taking care of our veterans.
Representative Lilly.
I'll pass.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to amend the motion, or make a motion. There is no motion. And I move that House File 2934 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'm going to ask for a roll call.
I make a motion that we table the bill.
No, the motion is that we pass the bill to the Committee on Ways and Means, and I'm asking for a roll call on passage and recommendation that we vote on it, recommend it to pass, and proceed to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Did you, Representative Simon, we have some issues regarding the taxes that are part of this bill, and that, as far as I know, have not been heard in the Tax Committee. And I think that's why, very prudently, Representative Lanning moved that we lay this bill over, and there are elements that need to be heard again, and potentially committee leadership would make a decision regarding how it should proceed from here.
Mr. Chair, I understand. I respect Representative Lanning. I trust him. I just disagree with him. I think laying this over is a way to say to the veterans community, we're giving you a pat on the head, and we're giving you kind of a fake hearing, and I think that's really raising people's hopes and expectations. too high. So I think we should just put our chips on the table, and if we like what this is, we should move it along. That's my motion, and I'm asking for a roll call.
Representative Winkler.
And Mr. Chair, I don't see any tax provisions in the bill, so I don't know why this bill would have to go to taxes. So I think Ways and Means is the appropriate place to sort out taxes and spending. That's what the committee's for.
Yeah. Representative Bannion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that it's premature to do this because this bill does not have an appropriation that pays for it. Normally, if we have a bill that spends money, we have an appropriation line placed in the bill. There's no appropriation line placed in here. And so, Mr. Chairman, if I may, I'd move to table the bill. Table the motion from Mr. Simon, from Representative Simon, until such time as we have that information.
Mr. Chair, I'll ask for a roll call on that motion. And I want to make clear to the veterans sitting out here who may not be familiar with legislative procedure, when someone says they're going to lay it over after the deadline, that means this is basically a fake hearing. So I think you should know what's going on here. This is a motion for the people. All of us here like what's in this bill, and we want to move it along. But some people, I believe, are toying with your expectations. So if we just lay it over, that means it's a fake hearing. And I don't want to do that to you. I like this bill, and I think we should move it along. So the vote here today is whether to basically kill it by laying it over in this committee. That's what laying it over means for those of you who are here and earnestly trying to get this passed. But if you, it's not a fake hearing if we actually move it along and act on it. So I don't want you to believe that people are giving you a hearing to kind of mollify you and make you feel good. I don't want to do that to you. I want to actually pass this thing. So laying it over is a fancy legislative title for, at this stage in the session anyway, killing the bill.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, a lot of the items that are in this bill we've heard and are in other bills, and I think that the audience should know that as well. The other thing is that there is no fiscal note on this. There is, in fact, items in here that need to be paid for, and bills are not put to a vote without a fiscal note, without understanding where the dollars come from. So I agree that this should be tabled.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to that point, can we ask Representative Spinsrud, order, please.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Point of order, Mr. Chair. A motion to table is not a debatable motion.
And there's been a roll call request. Okay. I know there's additional testimony that'd like to be heard on this bill. So we can take that vote right now and table the bill.
Mr. Chair, we're tabling the motion. The motion is to re-refer and pass. So if the motion is tabled, then we can go back to the existing bill.
Thank you. We're going to take a short recess.
We will call the meeting back to order. A motion has been made to table consideration of the bill.
Mr. Chair, the motion was to table the Simon motion for passage.
Okay. Is that correct? Okay, all in favor of tabling the Simon motion?
There's a roll call requested.
Roll call has been requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Chairman Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
Representative Kahn. Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Bannion.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Gauthier. Representative Green. Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Lohmer. Representative McElfatrick.
Yes.
Representative Moline.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Murray. Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Slawick. Representative Stensrud.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, I didn't have my name called.
Oh, I apologize. Representative Winkler.
No.
Slawick.
Representative Slawick.
No.
She called a friend.
No, yes.
She
have a friend.
Yes, no.
My friends are doing it.
9-6. The motion to table it passes with a vote of 9 in favor and 6 opposed. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I notice on page 2 of the bill there is an appropriation here. It's in the bill for $1.455 million. I know that some people here, the chair included, have some reservations about what they perceive as the taxes. Since this is part of the governor's supplemental budget, and that supplemental budget is funded in large part, maybe completely, through changing the FOC loopholes. So I'm going to make a second motion, Mr. Chair. And my second motion is that House File 2934 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. And I request a roll call on that motion.
The motion has been made that the bill be recommended to pass and sent to the Tax Committee. Discussion of that motion? Representative
Whitey. Mr. Chair, is, point of order, is that if we've tabled the bill, can that... or tabled the previous motion, can we actually move on the bill, make additional moves on the bill?
Representative Leidiger, yes. The previous motion to table was, state again that motion, Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, the previous motion that was just successfully tabled was my motion to send it to Ways and Means. This is now a motion to send it to taxes, so it's a separate okay. motion.
So the motion now is to... have the bill be recommended to pass and send it to the Tax Committee. And I would urge a no vote. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair and members, I just cannot express the level of my disappointment that we're not moving this bill. I think Representative Simon captured the essence of what's happening here today. And, you know, we all watch newscasts of these neighbors of ours that have served our country and served our state with honor. And, you know, that just we've heard this compelling testimony and on this issue, and that we're not going to step up and do something for a tax increase if you're, I mean, it's ridiculous. It just makes me sick. And Mr. Chair, I just, you know, we've been working on a project that's going to involve a $1 billion tax increase for football, and then we're not going to take care of people that are coming back. I mean, there's 20% unemployment in this group. Think about that, 20%. It's ridiculous. And then, you know, we have all these vets. I mean, 20% unemployment, what that does to their families. I mean, these are real people, and I know Representative Mackerfecker has had a bill, which I support, and I certainly support this. So not to make, to move this bill forward today and every day that we're in our body, I just find it embarrassing to the body and to the state of Minnesota that we're not going to do this. So that's...
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just so that, again, that the audience understands... many of the elements that are in this bill have already been heard in another fashion or form in previous bills, and they have been moved. So I make a motion that we table the motion.
That motion is non-debatable.
I request a roll call.
Mr. Roll call has been requested on the motion to table the previous motion. Would you call the roll?
Chairman Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Benson.
Yes.
Representative Kahn.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Banyan.
Yes.
Representative Downey.
Yes.
Representative Gauthier.
No.
Representative Green. Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Leidiger.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Lohmer. Representative McElpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Moline.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Murray. Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Stensrud.
Yes.
Representative Erdahl. Representative Winkler.
No.
Ninety-eight. The motion to table is passed on a vote of 9-4 and 8 opposed. If there's no further discussion, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This simple little bill of mine has gotten more attention than I expected it might, to coin that phrase from Representative Erdahl. I just want y'all to know, I mean, as a disabled veteran, been through this process, know what it's like. Don't like seeing it as a football of any kind, and kind of feels like a football to me. I've pledged to Representative McElfatrick that I would work to make this what it needs to be for veterans. I'll trust it, Mr. Chair, that we can do that. Thank you.
Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members and those testifying. I've personally had bills laid over in this committee, and I just wanted to, on the record, say that laying over a bill does not, it's not a fake hearing today. We've heard of bills that have portions of this and similar intentions, and this is a reasonable process for us to move through. I've had bills laid over, later passed through this committee, and those bills have been improved. So this is a very reasonable process, and it happens all the time. And I just wanted to make certain that a lot of the great speeches we've heard here in committee don't just go without comment from my side of my point of view. So thank you for that.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Stensrud, the reason why laying over a bill is killing a bill is because we have a deadline, and if this bill does not pass out of this committee on Friday, it doesn't pass anywhere. And it may have portions or pieces in other places, and it may have portions of spending for these Veterans Affairs programs in other places, but this bill, if it doesn't have a hearing and doesn't get passed out of this committee by Friday, is dead. And that's a simple fact.
Representative Winkler, a lot can happen in a few days, or even one day, in this legislature, as you well know. Representative Leidiger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to echo what Representative Stensrud has said. I mean, we've heard many weeks ago several bills dealing with veterans in this committee, and there are at least four veterans on this committee, including the chairman of the veteran committee is on this committee. So, I think we look after the veterans very closely. I've been in the Navy for 23 years. I keep an eye on not only what happens at the federal government at that level, but also at the state level. And I think that what we see and what we're doing and have been doing all year long, then to have this bill come up really at the last minute, I think laying this over makes a lot of sense, that a lot of these provisions can be looked at, and most all of them are already rolled into previous bills. So I think it's important to note that there are many ways to do this, and I think the way that we've been doing this and doing things for the veterans the entire year has been extremely appropriate. Doing things for the veterans the entire year has been extremely appropriate.
Representative Downey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've heard passionate points made about the importance of this bill, and yet apparently it wasn't important enough to get in under the first deadline that it could actually have been heard in the Veterans Committee, where it rightfully should have started. So I appreciate there's a lot of grandstanding and politicking going on, and attempts at creating the mail pieces for the next campaign. But members, if this bill were that important, why was it not introduced in time to be heard in the Veterans Committee? We've been down here, what, 2 months? So important. This bill is so important for our veterans, and yet we can't get the bill drafted in time to be heard in its proper first committee?
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, I just want to sort out something in terms of the substance here. Obviously, there was a reason this was given a hearing, and I assume it's because, though there are some chunks and pieces in it that are traveling elsewhere, there are some chunks and pieces that are not. Otherwise, there would be no reason to have this hearing. It would be kind of silly to do it unless there was some value added in this bill and something that somebody liked. So I don't know who to address the question to, whether it's Representative Purcell or Representative McElfatrick or any of the testifiers, but I think this committee should know and the public should know what is, whether you like it or don't, that's not the issue. What is in this bill that is not traveling elsewhere? Can anyone answer that question? I don't know the answer. If this were just comprised of bits and pieces that were already elsewhere, we wouldn't need this hearing. I just assume, and maybe my assumption's wrong, that there's some value added in this bill. So could we get that? I think that's important to know. What is in this that is unique to this and that is not traveling elsewhere?
Representative McElhaney? I'm not representative. I'm sorry, mister.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, what's not in this bill traveling anywhere that I have seen, there's no funding for additional funding for MACV. There's not an appropriation to administer the expansion of the apprenticeships and OJT portion of the Minnesota GI Bill expansion. There is not an appropriation for the honor guards anywhere traveling that I'm aware of at this point in time, and there is not any other bills relative to CVSO grants traveling in the House or Senate that I'm aware of at this time either.
Representative Simon, the problem is that the means of funding the provisions in this bill is not going to pass, and that's the reality. Representative Simon.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I do respect that, and we have differences of opinion, and the veterans who are here and who are here to testify for this bill should know there's a good faith disagreement. It doesn't mean one side's against veterans or one side's more for veterans. That's important to know. We all equally support the goals here, but there is a difference of opinion on the revenue. The governor's budget, which funds this, would close some corporate loopholes, specifically offshore foreign operating corporation loopholes from companies that park their profits offshores in, you know, the Cayman Islands or other places, and the governor has said to fund this, we should close those tax loopholes. There is a principal disagreement. It doesn't mean that people who are against that funding source are against you. I want to be very clear on that. That's not what I'm saying, and that's not the truth, and I would never say that. What I am saying is we have a good faith disagreement on how to fund it. I believe, and many people in this room agree with me, that it's not a lot to ask to close some corporate loopholes for those who are doing very well and have been doing very well even during tough times, to close loopholes, and it's not a lot to ask for our veterans to use that mechanism to fund. You'll hear, I'm sure, in a minute from others who say no, that that will somehow kill jobs, and that depriving a large corporation of the ability to park profits in the Solomon Islands or in Madagascar or in the Cayman Islands is somehow necessary. I disagree with that. Those who disagree with me on this aren't trying to do you harm. They just feel maybe that there should be some other way of funding this. I would say, though, I would challenge those people who think that it's necessary to create jobs to park profits in the Cayman Islands. I would challenge them if they think that this is a worthy priority, at least as worthy as football, that they come up with a funding source. And if they don't like taking away corporate loopholes, I respect that. We have a genuine disagreement among thoughtful people in this room and elsewhere, but then I challenge them to come up with the funding that will get you what you want and need and deserve. So the question here today, and it's a good faith one between thoughtful people who want the right thing, some people like me want to close the corporate loopholes, others feel passionately, strongly, vehemently that that would be bad. I disagree with them, but then I challenge them to come up with the funding that you deserve.
Representative Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could ask a question of the author, Representative Purcell, I'm getting here late from Ways and Means, and so I haven't had a chance to read your bill, but is the repeal of the FOC tax provision in 2934?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to need to find the specifics on that, Representative Down, if you it is not in this 2934.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I've been sitting in tax committee. I think we spent a full 10 hours one Friday, and I got home pretty late at night, and I think I heard, 5 maybe. FOC amendments in the Tax Committee to repeal the FOC tax provisions in Minnesota. And I don't think I ever remember any of these articles. I don't know. I think we did have one thing in there about apprenticeships that that I think we actually accepted and actually did move in the bill. And there's some veterans provisions in the tax bill that we did pass, which the members on the other side of the aisle actually voted against, just as a reminder, taking those same FOC provisions and actually allocating them and passing the bill through the Tax Committee and off the floor, which I personally voted for, and I think every member in the minority voted against. So members, this is just a ruse, and for Representative Simon to say that, you know, the other side of the aisle isn't saying that we're against vets, maybe I should pull out the mail card that came into my district this big with a picture of a Marine on the front telling people in my district that I voted against veterans simply because I voted against a bonding bill, hundreds of millions of dollars of bonding with one small provision for a vet's home. When I had voted literally for and had fought with Representative Severson for veterans throughout that entire legislative session. So to sit over there and say, you're not going to use this stuff, that you trust us, that we're for the vets. We have cast the votes that actually repealed FOCs and put money towards vets programs in the tax bill that you all voted against. And there's nothing in this bill that takes the FOCs and appropriates that money to these programs. And if this bill was so important, you would have had it in front of the Tax Committee 2 weeks ago. We would have heard this bill as an amendment in Tax Committee. We didn't. You didn't get the bill in on time. And to come here and make these statements,
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Downey, we all understand. I think a lot of people in this committee and who've served before understand that political attacks are not pleasant. And I think it is wrong for us to bring that campaign discussion into committee today. The fact of the matter is that, as I understand the testimony, Section 2 of the bill, which is the bulk of the, I mean, almost the entire appropriation, is not traveling elsewhere. It's the $1.455 million. As I understand the testimony, that's the money that is not moving anywhere else. And the statement from the chair, Representative Downey, is what has triggered this tax discussion. The chair's statement was that the means to pay for this appropriation will not pass. And so we haven't brought up the tax issue. The chair brought up the tax issue. We think that this is a good way to spend the money. This is the governor's supplemental budget. He's proposed closing FOCs and a number of other things to raise a little bit of revenue to help veterans, to do some other things with jobs. And we understand that you have a difference of opinion about whether that's a good idea or not. But the fact of the matter is that there is a $1.5 almost million dollar appropriation in front of us for veteran services, for making the GI Bill work for on-the-job apprenticeships, for a number of other things, honor guards. And this committee's job is not to raise the money. This committee's job is to say this is a good appropriation. We made a motion to send this to the Ways and Means Committee, which could make the tax decision line up, and that motion was tabled. So I don't think that there's any high mark of honor in trying to stop this committee from taking a vote on moving this bill to the Ways and Means Committee, where the finances can be sorted out. The fact of the matter is that we have a choice of whether we want to spend this money or not. And if the FOCs are a higher priority, or you don't like the way the governor funds his supplemental budget, the Ways and Means Committee can figure that out. And then finally, Representative Downey, I would note that this bill was introduced 8 days ago, and our committee deadline is this coming Friday. So I don't really think there's an issue of it not being worthy. There's certainly plenty of bills that get introduced late but before deadline that manage to make it through the process. So I understand why campaign and political events outside this building can make us very upset, but as legislators, our job is to decide whether this appropriation is a priority or not. We believe it is, and we think it should move, but that motion was tabled.
Representative Winkler, this, as you well know, is a finance committee, and we have to be very careful in passing legislation out of this committee that authorizes funding that there isn't a source to pay for it. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in terms of the legislative procedure, I certainly don't make the decisions about where bills are referred. So on March 19th, this bill was read for the first time and referred to this committee. Now, we could make a motion on the floor today to move it to some other committee if that's what people would prefer, but this did meet the deadline. Representative Downey, I understand the frustration. I've been attacked, too, in political mail pieces where something was taken out of context. I'm sure many of our members have been and probably will be, unfortunately. I'm a little alarmed that I'm being criticized for being even-handed. Because I didn't come out and say somehow you were against veterans, which you are not, somehow I'm being criticized for saying that we're all for veterans. And if you want to use my remarks on your next lit piece, feel free to quote a Democratic representative who said you're not, you know, I mean, that's fine. I'm trying to be even-handed here, and for members in the audience, not to suggest, and maybe I wasn't clear enough, that anyone here is against veterans. What I am trying to suggest is that some of us want to move this bill today. Others don't. Doesn't mean they hate veterans. They don't. It means we have a difference in priorities, though, about urgency. The rumors flying, and some of us wouldn't be in a position to know, are that we're going to adjourn the entire session next Thursday, a week from Thursday. That's it. Gone. Until next January. That means, if that's true, we have 9 days to get this bill passed. You've already heard that there are at least 4 things in this bill that others' bills don't do. And while it's true that those other bills are traveling, who knows what's going to happen to them? I don't know. But as to the 4 things in this bill, at least according to my notes, that are in this bill that are nowhere else, including the money, by the way, to make them happen, it's do or die now. Representative Landing, our chair, is right. Things can happen in a legislative session, and things can happen on the fly and quickly and without notice. So who knows what will happen. But it's a lot more likely to happen if we pass this out of here and at least move it along to another committee. That's the debate here. It's not about who loves or hates veterans. I think we all admire, respect, and want to help veterans equally. So let's not get into that argument. The question is, do we want to do something about it today or lay it over and carry the very high risk that laying it over turns in, unintentionally, but turns into a death sentence for the bill? I don't want to do that. So I think we ought to move it somewhere today. And that's the good faith debate here. Not about motives or intentions, but about the quickness of moving this and getting veterans closer to the relief that they need, at least from my perspective.
Representative Leidiger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Last year, at the beginning of this budget cycle, we closed a $5 billion deficit. If I'm not mistaken, out of this committee, everything was cut with the exception of Veterans Affairs, which was totally held harmless. And if I'm not mistaken, we increased their budget by, and I don't recall the amount, but it was increased substantially. And this year we took on several other initiatives for the veterans which needed to be done. A lot of them included outright benefits that were added, and my understanding is we have several amendments to Representative McElfatrick's bill, one of which is the $100,000 for the burial, which is drafted and is being attached to her bill. So there are several items that are being moved on from this bill. Now, when I moved to Minnesota, when I retired and I came here, I was pleasantly surprised to see that both sides of the aisle truly did care about the veterans. But I look at this and I fear that this is becoming a political football, and it shouldn't. Now, there's people that have been watching these initiatives every single day, things that we do for the veterans. And I like the process that we have done in this committee up till now, but for this to come in at the last minute, nobody's saying that these things aren't going to get done, but the way to do this is to lay it over, bring those items into the bills that are currently traveling, and not you know, pass something that calls for additional dollars that really has that we have to go to a lot of different committees in order to make it happen. This is something that should have come in months ago. And I don't want this to become a political football. I want to continue thinking that, you know, these are issues that both sides of the aisle can come to agreement on and we can pass.
Representative Anderson?
Mr. Chair, I think a lot of what's been said has already been said and doesn't need to be repeating, but I know that being on the Ag Committee, they say it's against the law to take horses to the Petrine plant. So I don't want to keep doing that, and that's what we're doing with this language that we're talking about. But we did have the direction from our leadership that anything that doesn't have the financial stability or meet all the guidelines that are needed in coordinating bills across the board, not just necessarily in finance, but we have to make sure that they meet, as Representative Lanning's already mentioned, meet the criteria that we're going forward. And I think it's, if I've been being in the minority many years, many times, chairman would lay bills over to have it looked at to determine how it meets the overall scope of their procedures. So I think that it was very fair of you, Representative Lanning, to request that this be laid over.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I missed a ruckus of a debate. But I want to point out, you know, part of this was waiting until the February forecast. So we're really talking about March 1st. From March 1st to the 19th to meet a deadline is not a problem. It is not late. And for people to say that is just poking the nose of the governor's office, and let's just call a spade there. This was not late. And it seems to me we have bills all the time that cover the same materials, the same appropriations, or maybe various differences, and we move them along. So I'm not quite understanding why we now want to claim things are late and we're moving this, so we don't need to move that. We move the same thing several different ways at the same time. So I find that really disturbing that's the argument. I am hoping the chair will bring this back in time that we can move this along by Friday. And I'm going to trust Mr. Chairman that you at least give us a fair shake in that regard.
We are at the about the end of our time, and as has already been indicated, the chair is intending to lay this bill over. And with that, members, we're adjourned.